الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Some ahkam first before we get into the lecture. Several things. One of the brothers asked me a question tonight, and I thought it was good to share it here. It's a question about Salat al-Jama'ah. Salat al-Jama'ah, as you all know, we have to be connected to the Imam, right? When the Imam starts his prayer, we wait for him, of course. He says, Allahu Akbar. When he says, Allahu Akbar, and finishes the R or the Ra of Akbar, that's when you can start. So if he's saying, Allahu Akbar, you can't say it along with him. You have to wait for him to finish his Takbiratul Ihram, and then you connect. Now another question is, if this is the case that I have to wait for him to start and then I connect, what if I am not right behind him directly? For example, I'm the fifth or sixth person in line and I'm connected through those people to the Imam in the first row. What if I'm in the third or fourth row and there's a row in front of me? And a row in front of them, and then the Imam. Do we also have to wait the same way we had to wait for the Imam to start and finish his Allahu Akbar for us to connect to him? Do we also have to wait for the people that are before us, that we're connected through to the Imam, for them to say their Allahu Akbar too and then start? Or no? If it's just us and our minds, we'll say that, yeah, it makes sense that we have to wait for everyone before us to say Allahu Akbar and start, like kind of like a domino effect. Okay, one by one, each one of them has to wait. So the guy that's before the Imam has to say Allahu Akbar, then the guy next to him can say Allahu Akbar, then the guy next to him can say Allahu Akbar, so on and so forth. It makes sense to be like this, but that's not the ruling. That's not the ruling. The ruling is, if the people have gotten up and they're ready to start their salat, even though they might not have said Allahu Akbar yet, it's all good. If they're ready to start their salat, I can say Allahu Akbar. Even if I'm the 10th person in line and no one else has said the Takbiratul Ihram yet, but since they're all standing, of course, like they're not playing with their phone, they're not talking to each other. No, they've gotten up, they want to say Allahu Akbar, but they haven't yet. They're ready to start, but they haven't started. That's enough for me to be able to start, and I will be connected through them to the Imam. Okay? This is something that usually is misunderstood. And it doesn't matter if it's in the first line or if it's in the second or third line. Okay? The people that you're connected through from the front to the Imam. Same thing again. That's one ruling I wanted to talk about. Another ruling that I was asked about here is regarding food stuff like balsamic vinegar or white wine vinegar. Okay? Vinegar that comes from wine, right? This is a question that's asked. Can we have it or not? Now, when I say can we, it doesn't mean necessarily if it's halal, you can. Go ahead and make sure you do. It's okay to stay away from it if you like. But the truth of the matter is, when you open the Risala, you will see that there's different ways of making najis things tahir, najis things pak. One way is to pour water. For example, if your hand is najis, you pour water on it. If, for example, there's a building that the wall becomes najis, there's a way of making it tahir through the sun shining on it. There's different ways. One of these methods of making najis things tahir, najis things pak, is through inqilab, they call it. Through inqilab. The first example that you will find in the Risala Amaliyah for something najis becoming tahir through inqilab is vinegar, which was wine before. Interesting. Okay, it's interesting. Go check, see if the Shaykh is telling the truth or not tonight. Go on sistani.org, for example. Go to the Islamic laws. Okay, there's a link there. Islamic laws, which links to his Islamic laws book. Okay, go look under taharat and najasat, the things that make things tahir, the methods of making najis things tahir. Number 5 or 6 on the list is inqilab. Something changing in essence from one thing to another thing. For example, he has another example there. And this isn't just Ayatollah Sistani. This is other ulama too. Other maraja say the same thing. For example, if a dog that's najisul ayn, it's a najis substance, it's a najis thing, dogs, no matter how much you scrub a dog, that dog won't become tahir. Okay, no matter how many times you take it to the shower, it won't become tahir. Some guy once, he's not religious. He had a dog, and they're like, "What do you do at home? Like, this dog is najis." He said, "No, don't worry, I take it to the shower." Like, if it's najis in and of itself, you can't make it tahir. But if a dog, they say, dies, and this is also an example, look in the Islamic law books, dies and decomposes and disintegrates into soil or salt or whatever, they say this is also an example of inqilab. Change in essence, it becomes tahir. That soil that was before was the body of a dog is tahir. Soil is tahir. Interesting. So vinegar that comes from these substances, if it has undergone inqilab and has changed from that to vinegar and it's considered vinegar now according to common perception, society, they look at this is vinegar, it's not wine anymore. This is tahir. This is okay to eat, to consume. Or else it wouldn't be number one on the list in the risala. You can go check it. Of course, I'm not saying you have to have this type of vinegar. Well, what I'm just saying is, this is what the maraji say. Number 2. Number 3. The third ruling I want to talk about a little bit, and this might take a little bit of time, but it's okay. Is about khums. Okay, I have to explain something because people are always talking about this and asking about it, and this is something that is misunderstood. The same way khums is compulsory, it's not voluntary, and whether I like it or not, it's a responsibility. The same way certain aspects of it are also involuntary. What is that? What do I mean? And what's the example of that? When it comes to khums, those of us who have a job, and usually that's how it is, we make money through jobs. We don't make money through, I don't know, agriculture, planting trees and crops. Usually it's just, you know, normal jobs that we have. For those who have jobs, they have to have a khums date, a khums deadline, I like to call it. Which means that you have a certain date. Every year on that day, you have to take care of the khums that you have. The problem is though, people think that this khums date is up to them when to determine it. So for example, he will say, "I set it on my birthday. My birthday is my khums date. January 1st is my khums date. Christmas is my khums date. Muharram, the beginning of Muharram is my khums date." Whatever. But the truth is, it's not up to us. It's not up to us when to choose when our khums date is going to be. And then whenever that date comes, we set the balances. We balance everything out when it comes to the khums. No. The khums date is something that you don't choose. It is determined by certain things. What are those things? Well, it depends on who you follow. Ayatollah Khamenei has one view here. Ayatollah Sistani has another view. Ayatollah Sistani, he says, for those who work and have regular jobs, their khums date is the day they start working. So if you started working on, I don't know, March 13th, March 13th will be your khums date. That means every year on March 13th is when you have to take care of those dues that you have. Ayatollah Khamenei says no. His verdict is the first paycheck that you get. Okay, when you're working, the first paycheck that you get will be the first day of your khums year. That will be your khums deadline. So every year, that's the day you have to balance things. So brothers and sisters, some people who are religious, they kind of neglect this fact that when it comes to the khums date, it's not up to me when to set it. It is set by itself. But what if I've forgotten that day? Then that's when you have to refer to the office of your marja and straighten it out. Okay, there's ways, there's a process to this that they show you. Okay. What if I don't have a job? I had heard that 1 year has to pass, and that's when I owe homes. 1 year passes, and then if I have any money left, if I've gotten some money, if 1 year passes over that or on that wealth that I have, then I have to pay homes. That's for people who don't have a home state. For you, for those who have a home state, if you earned something a month ago, and that home state arrives, it's still liable to homes. Okay? This is something also that has to be explained. What if I don't have a job though? When's my home state? If you don't have a job, you don't have a home state. If you don't have a home state, what do? Nothing. You don't owe anything. Unless, for example, you shovel snow for somebody, you get something, they give you something. If that money stays for a year, then yes, you'll have to pay homes for it. So for those who have jobs, it's different than those who don't have a job. Those who have jobs will have a set home state. Everything is due on that home state, regardless of when they earned that money. For those who don't have a job, they don't have a home state. If you don't have a home state, then what happens is 1 year has to pass over on stuff that you have for it to be liable to homes. Okay? Recite three salawats, inshallah. Allahumma Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa. Brothers and sisters are tired tonight apparently, so we have to start shouting a little bit. It's the weekend, school is out. So let's have some energy. I'm kind of tired actually myself. Okay, we're talking about the good ways of looking at the dunya. Number one, we put behind us, is that the dunya in essence is not deceitful. It is a means of deception sometimes. The same way Allah even sometimes can be a means of deception. And that's why the Quran says shaitan sometimes fools us even through Allah himself. So Allah is not bad in essence. The dunya, same thing. Dunya is not bad in essence either. We are fooled by it sometimes though, because our essence has problems. We have to solve that with ourselves. That was number one. Number two is, it's a place to take lessons. Al-i'tibar. Lessons are to be taken. This is a good way of looking at dunya. A place where I come to take lesson. And we had two examples from Imam Ali alayhi salam about taking lessons from the dunya. Number one, we finished. Number two was left last night. But before I go on to number two, there's one point I wanted to mention last night, I forgot. About how I talked about last night, reflection, thinking, educating ourselves. I talked about that a little bit. And how youth have to not wait, don't have to wait for others to take their hand. You guys have to be proactive. Right? Proactiveness is the best. Even when it comes to like hijab, some people, they don't have problems with hijab. But you know, it's in the society that we live in that it's hard for them. Okay? Even sometimes the sister is observing hijab, for example, but it's hard for her, you know? She has that little guilt in her. Right? But I saw this meme once, it was interesting. It showed this sister with hijab, and she said, can't be oppressed or something. I can't be oppressed. Too busy being awesome. Okay, and I like that because she's like, I'm going to be proactive. I will let others know that coolness isn't about me whether I cover my head or not. No, no. It's what I think and I believe in it. It's my identity. I love it when I see brothers who are religious or sisters that are religious. They're the ones dictating to the rest that this is what it's all about. Right? Too cool to be oppressed. Too cool to be made fun of. I'm the one who's cool. Alright? And I can dress the way I want. Right? In this world that we live in right now, right? It's not about you being awkward or not. It's about how I feel, how confident I am in what I'm all about. That's what it is. It's easy. It's too easy now. We got to get that proactiveness going. Same thing when it comes to educating ourselves. Same thing when it comes to sitting down and thinking and pondering. I talked about this a little bit about this last night. Now, sometimes people will say, but brother, if these guys, if they sit down and they think and reflect, sometimes we will start questioning things. And this is dangerous because You know, all the foundations that we have in our head and our mind regarding deen, regarding Islam, regarding Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, all these things, they start, the foundations start shaking when we start reflecting, thinking. What's the answer to this? This should be something that gets in the way of us encouraging our youth to go and think. And well, thinking, no, it's okay. There's a story actually, there's a hadith where one of the companions comes to the imam. He's upset. He says to the imam, he says, I'm questioning everything. Things aren't clear for me. You know, I'm doubting Allah's existence, doubting this, doubting that. My iman is being compromised. He's afraid. He comes to the imam. This is good. This is a good sign. He comes to the imam because he's afraid. It's good when youth come to you and they say, I'm doubting everything. It's good. They know where to go to ask. That's good. He comes to the imam and he says, this is my worry. I'm concerned. What does the imam say to him? Does the imam say, oh, you're so bad. Why? Why did you even allow yourself to think about Allah? Of course, we have a hadith that say, don't try to get to the end of Allah and try to understand everything about Allah, because we can't. We're limited. Allah is unlimited. We can't. There isn't compatibility. There isn't. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that don't think at all. Shut it off. Shut it down completely. No. The imam, what does he respond? He says, "Hada min sulb al-iman." This is actually faith itself. Faith incarnate. He tells this companion of his, you're doubting in Allah? This is faith. That's so cool. Like how? Why? How does it work? Shaykh Mutahhari rahmatullah alayhi, he explains. He says, doubt, question, all these things, they're good. They're a bridge from one little island to a greater land. Of course, you don't want to go on the bridge and sit there on the bridge. That's one thing. When you have questions, you go out and you try to find the answers, brothers and sisters. And I said, in this day and age, it's too easy to find answers. You ask one alim, he doesn't convince you, go to another one. There's lots that come and go, especially in centers like this one. You've always got alims coming and going. Right? It's too easy. Contact the program director, contact whoever the alim is staying with. I have a question, I have to find the answer to it. It's too easy. So it's a bridge that you got to cross though. You don't sit there. It's like a bridge that you have, they attack that bridge. It's a wooden bridge. The understanding you had of Islam, of Iman, of Allah, is attacked by a missile. This wooden bridge crumbles. What are you going to do? You rebuild a bridge that's stronger. Reinforce it. So if our house, if our bridge or whatever it is, they attack it, it crumbles, we rebuild it in a way that it's immune to attacks like that. If a question attacks my mind regarding Allah, regarding the foundations of my faith, what do I do? Am I upset that this foundation was hit and the foundation came down? No. Now I rebuild it by asking those who I have to ask. And this time when I rebuild it, it's stronger, it's reinforced. Again it's attacked. It comes to the ground, again I rebuild it again with more questions. It's as easy as that. That's why the imam says, listen, questions aren't problematic. You're doubting, it's all right. This is actually faith itself. Because after the doubt came, you didn't just sit there and say, okay, now that there's doubts, okay, I'm going to just sit here now. You went after the answers. This is iman. That shows that you have the iman in you. Questions come up, you just go after the answer, but the iman is there anyway. This is a point that I wanted to make. So questions are okay. And it's not a, don't worry if sometimes you find yourself doubting. Lots of us when we're young, we start doubting. Where is God? Where is God? Huh? Tell me. Where is he? If I can't see him, I really don't feel him. Where is he? And then we sit down and we talk to somebody, they explain it to us. That's how it is. You can't expect a youth of 10, 15 years of age to know Allah the way an Ayatollah knows, the way an uncle knows. No. You can't expect it. The second example that we wanted to take from Imam Ali alayhi salam when it comes to taking lessons from this dunya, Imam Ali says, listen, a good dunya is a dunya that lessons are taken from. We said, oh Amir al-Mu'mineen, enlighten us with an example. He said, I'll give you two examples. Number one was last night. Number two, I'm going to talk about. Number two of examples is, he says, وَمِنْ عِبَارِهَا أَنَّ الْمَرْأَ يُشْرِفُ عَلَىٰ أَمَلِهِ فيقتطعه حضور أجله فلا أمل يدرك ولا مؤمل يترك. He says, you want me to give you an example of a lesson that you take from this life? An example of that would be that, he says, some people get this close, you see, that people get this close to achieving that ultimate dream that they had. He's been planning all his life to reach that ultimate goal of his, and he gets this close to it. But then what happens? Before he can actually achieve it, حُدُورُ أَجَلِهِ, the time to leave this life arrives. We have many stories. We have stories of greats, just in contemporary world today that we live in. This guy was huge. He had a revolution in technology, when it comes to technology and touch screens and stuff. But all of a sudden he died. Yeah, and he was going way up there, soaring the skies. He was getting to those things that he wanted. But all of a sudden, this link of him to this world was cut off. Imam Ali says, you want me to give you an example of what lessons to take? Look at those people who, they had these great dreams. They put every egg they had in that basket to reach it, and they were this close. فَيَقْتَطِعُهُ حُضُورُ أَجَلِهِ. But his ajal, the time to leave, arrives, and it's over. It's that easy. It's interesting how any problem we have in this life, we always have a way around it. Okay? There's always a way around it, except death. When someone dies, I mean, I've felt this personally. I don't know about you, brothers and sisters, but like you're like thinking, is there a way that I can bring him back? There is no way. It's over. It's completely over. There's no way around it. No way back. No return. Allah says, this should be a lesson that we take. This is an example. فَلَا أَمَلٌ يُدْرَكْ وَلَا مُؤَمِّلٌ يُتْرَكْ. So the wish that he had, the hopes that he had are not reached, he says, Imam Ali. And the person who was wishing, لَا يُتْرَكْ, he's not set free so that he can live on. No. They take him, and at the same time, the dreams that he had, he leaves for others to achieve. So is this dunya deceiving us? No, we're taking lessons. We shouldn't deceive ourselves. We shouldn't turn a blind eye on the realities. We've got to have the realistic approach, the realistic perspective. They say Prophet Nuh alayhi salam. Even with prophets, it's interesting how this happens. They say Prophet Nuh alayhi salam, Malakul Maut comes to him, the angel of death. He comes to Prophet Nuh, he says, Prophet Nuh, the time has come. Now, Prophet Nuh isn't a person to not want to leave this world. Of course, he's a prophet. But at the same time, he says, really? That soon? That soon? Now, you brothers and sisters probably know the story of Prophet Nuh. How long did he live? 950 years? Nope. The Quran says he called his people for 950 years. Okay? So he lived longer than that. But let's just say 950, round it up to 1,000. 1,000 years when Malikul Maut comes to him and says it's time to go, what is Prophet Nuh, the first thing he says? He says, really? That soon? Malikul Maut says, what do you say about the people that will come in the end of times when they live 60, 70, 100 years? Prophet Nuh says, man, if I was to live 100 years, I would finish my life in one sajda. That's how short 100 years is for me being Prophet Nuh. And of course, Prophet Nuh lived more than 1,000 years. But we're just saying, even if it was 1,000. That's how it is. When it comes, even sometimes prophets are like, really? That soon? And that's a wake-up call to us, that Prophet Nuh says, I would finish my life with the sajda. That means that our lives are short. Can we not have fun? No, we can have fun. Halal fun. But you don't put all your eggs in one basket. You don't make your top priority in everything this. So Shaykh, you're saying that people who have planned, this person is so organized, he has planned for his future. 20, 30 years down the road, he knows what he's going to do. He's put all that into perspective for himself, and right before achieving it, he's cut off. So this is bad. We shouldn't plan for our future. Because when we plan for it, we don't know. We might never achieve it. Answer, hadith. We have to set a balance. We're going to talk about this a little bit. اعمل للدنيا كأنك تعيش أبدا. That's famous. You've heard it. اعمل للدنيا كأنك تعيش أبدا. واعمل لآخرتك كأنك تموت غدا. No, planning isn't bad. Planning isn't bad at all. A proper Muslim will plan, actually. So what is this? What is Imam Ali talking about? We'll talk about. I'll explain. The hadith says, plan and work for your dunya as if you are going to live in it forever. Right? So what are you going to do? You're not going to be like, okay, I'm going to die anyway, so let's just might as well slack off. No. Act as if you're going to be here forever. If you were here forever, what would you do? You would make sure that you secure your future by planning for it. Because who knows, you might be here for another 80, 90 years. You don't want to be some hobo. Because you need a halal means of life, of livelihood. The Prophet of Allah, when he took power in Medina, he said, O Allah, barik lana fil khubz. O Allah, bless us in our bread. Our bread here symbolizing, you know, the rizq and sustenance. Why? Because if we don't have bread, oh Allah, the hadith goes, oh Allah, we won't pray. We won't fast. The Prophet is saying this. He doesn't mean himself. He knows the people that he's dealing with. He says, if you don't bless us in this, then we're not going to pray or fast. We won't be righteous individuals. So yes, being righteous individuals depends on me having a halal livelihood, etc. So this hadith is saying, listen, act as if you're going to be here for the next 100, 200,000 years. Act as if, and plan for it. Oh, but I have enough to support my family. Well, if you can, why not support your community now, financially, with your time, effort, with your knowledge, whatever. It's mustahab. You can buy akhirah with money sometimes. With actual money. You can buy akhirah with your knowledge and learning. Last night, the hadith. People are three types, alim, or someone who is trying to learn and become an alim, or you're just the foam on the water that the hadith was talking about. Alim here doesn't mean necessarily, you know, become a sheikh. No. Alim and learning to become an alim is you're learning so that you know your religion, you know your deen, and that's what your brothers and sisters are doing by coming to, by attending classes, courses, sending your kids to Islamic school, etc., lectures, all that. That's what you're trying to do. That's good. So you're falling under that second category. But some people are not falling under either of these. They are the foam on the water that hadith says. They're worthless. Anyway. The hadith goes on to say, وَعْمَلْ لِآخِرَتِكَ كَأَنَّكَ تَمُوتُ غَدًا. The hadith says, alright, so this is the dunya part. Work and sweat as if you are going to be here forever. But when it comes to the akhirah, act as if what? You're going to die tomorrow. A person who knows he's going to pass away tomorrow, what's he going to do? Is he going to go and do haram stuff? Right? A person who believes in akhirah and knows that tomorrow he's going to die, for example. Or is he going to like pay a little bit more attention, hello, to his salat? Is he going to pay more attention to what he says in that last day or those last days of his life? Right? They say some of these people on death row, they're given this last wish for the best meal that they want. Right? And the orders that some of these guys place on, that are on death row, it's interesting. They really go all out. Right? They'll get the best meal that they... Okay? A person who looks and sees that there's another side to this world, he will say, if I have one more day, I'm not going to go for this stuff. I'm going to spend it for the more important things. I'm going to make the most out of this last day. The hadith says, for when it comes to akhirah, be very greedy. Right? Don't put things up, don't put things for later. Make sure you take care of them now, as soon as you can. We don't know if we're going to be here another day. But when it comes to dunya, that's how you do it. So we got a plan. So what is Imam Ali saying? They had hopes, they had plans. They were this close, but they were cut off. How do we explain that? The explanation. comes in the word of called bu'dul amal. The word, the term bu'dul amal. That is what's bad. Bu'dul amal means having high hopes. Let me give you an example. A person with a proper Islamic worldview will never sit there and have high hopes. He will plan for his future, but he won't plan like this. He won't set his goals as high hopes. What's a good example for that? Brother, sister, what's your goal and aim in life? Well, I want to reach a point where I got my own private jet. Okay, where I got my own private jet, and the mansion that I live in is like this. The American, to sum it up, the American dream. Some people, they'll tell me, what do you have against America? What do you have against the West? I don't have anything against the West. That's the good thing about Islam. Islam says it's East, West, I don't care. Islam is what counts. A person sometimes living in the West is better Muslim than a person living in the East, in a Muslim country. I'm talking about that ideology, unfortunately, that's spread. That's the problem. Okay? The problem isn't the geographical wherever you live in. No, it's not the geography. It's what sometimes is found in certain geographical locations that's problematic. Yes, we have more of a Western culture here now. We have more of a materialistic culture here now. And that's what I mean when I say American dream, right? That's what I mean. Or else being American, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Some of the companions of Imam Hussein, they say, weren't even Arab. Some were African. None of this counts. إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ أَتْقَاكُمْ. The most highest of you in Allah's eyes is the one who observes his wajib and haram the most. He doesn't care what color skin you have, where you're from. If you were born in the palace of the Fir'aun, still, it doesn't matter for Allah. If you were the worst of the worst, if you were Hur ibn Yazid, you caused Karbala to happen, it doesn't matter for Allah. What matters is when the time comes for you to leave this life, if you were one of the obedient or not, that's what counts. So this American dream, private jet, mansion, swimming pools, that's my ultimate goal. Some people even try to go a little step further. They say, listen, even though it's very unlikely that you'll achieve the American dream, there is a secret in this world, the secret. Imagine it. Imagine yourself in a private jet. Imagine yourself swimming in that swimming pool of yours, in that mansion of yours. This somehow, I don't know how, but the world will work towards you achieving this goal. But if you're always telling yourself negatively, I'm not going to achieve this, it's not going to happen, it won't happen. But if you keep telling yourself it will, inshallah, we will pray that you will have that private jet. But this is not what Imam Ali says we should be after. Imam Ali says, listen, those high hopes that you have to dedicate everything of yours to achieve, don't have high hopes. Have realistic hopes. What's your goal in life? My goal in life is to have a good home, a decent car, be able to send my kids to a Muslim school, be above average in my social status being above average. It's mustahab. It's mustahab. At-tawsi'a ala al-ayal is mustahab. To not be average, to be a little bit more than average, to make it easy on your family. This is all mustahab. It's not makruh. It's not haram. It's realistic. This is something Allah and Islam and Imam Ali says, yes, it's good. So when Imam Ali says they had hopes, they had plans, and they were cut off, this is not what's meant. That American dream stuff is what's meant. That private jet is what's meant. And it's unfortunate that sometimes our youth look at things like that. What do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be, now, don't take this the wrong way. I'm not saying it's bad in and of itself. But what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be an NBA superstar. Why? Because fame and fortune comes along with it. This isn't something like, you know, that, you know, has value Islamically, right? Because there's wealth in it so much that I'll have my private jet. Heck, even NBA players, lots of them don't have private jets. Recite Salawat. Because when you have high hopes, you put every effort, every egg that you have in that basket. One. Two, sometimes when you see that you can't achieve it through halal means, you will resort to haram means. That will cause great problems. And Nahj al-Balagha is full of stories about those people who mixed haram and halal to achieve those high hopes. You will stop at nothing. Umar ibn Sa'd, la'natullah alayhi, had high hopes. He wanted the governance of Ray, which was a beautiful land back then. Present-day Tehran. It's part of Tehran. He wanted that. He stopped at nothing to get there. Nothing. And he eventually didn't get it either. And subhanAllah, look at this. He's cut off. He never got it. And that's what's interesting about Islam. Islam looks at things realistically. It says, listen, don't have high hopes. Listen, have, even when it comes to you being a muttaqi, a righteous person, a person who observes Allah's haram and halal and stuff like that, don't think that it's all about namaz and roza. Imam Ali, what does he say? Usikum bitaqwallah. And then it gets practical. Recite salawat. He gives a practical way. He says, listen, I want you to be muttaqi. I want you to be a person who stays away from haram and observes the wajibat. But what does he say to accomplish this? He doesn't say, usikum bitaqwallah bis salati wa sawm. He says, usikum bitaqwallah wa nadhmi amrikum. Imam Ali says, I want you to have taqwa. What is this, the means for taqwa? Being organized. Oh, we thought he's going to say fast a lot and do, like, you know, lots of Quran. Well, that's good. But he says, he looks at the whole picture. He says, listen, if someone wants to have taqwa, not commit haram, do wajibat, this person has to be organized in life. He has to plan. See, this is explaining what he means over there when he says those who have plans and high hopes. Planning isn't bad. You have to be organized, brothers and sisters. It starts from when you're 10 years old, 12 years old. If you really want, when you grow up, not to commit haram, 30, 40% of the jobs out there right now, brothers and sisters, are haram. You have to have the option of choosing between what your job is going to be. Go find out what's haram and not. From now, you got to get good grades by through being organized. You playing games is okay. Playing video games is all right. Sports are good. I play sports sometimes. Others play sports. Everyone plays sports. It's good. But there has to be a balance. Why? Because if you spend too much time on that, then you don't get good grades, then you grow up. And since you didn't do good in school, then college and high and university also, you're going to be lacking and slacking. And then all of a sudden you see that you have nothing as credentials. Others are going to dictate to you what job you can have and what job you can't have. And that's when you're like, you know, like a little bit of haram here alone. It's all right. Yeah, sure, I work in a place that's haram or something haram happens that I'm not supposed to work there, but I have no choice. Well, if a person jumps off of a building, from like a 20-story building, jumps off of the building, on the way down, he's like, oh man, I'm regretful, I shouldn't commit suicide. Oh Allah, forgive me. Like, I don't know, he has a lot of time to think of all this while, you know, on the way down. He's like, oh Allah, I'm sorry, forgive me, but like right now I have no choice, I can't go back up. So now I'm forced, right? I'm forced. It's like a person who, he's in the desert, he's stuck, he's dying of thirst. He has like a water bottle, and for some reason there's like some liquor here. He pours the water out, and all that's left is liquor. And he's like, oh Allah, I have no choice now. And seriously, he doesn't. And it is wajib for him to have the liquor now because he has no choice really, if his life depends on it. But the thing is that you've sinned though, by pouring that water out. You've sinned when you jumped off the building. You know, like halfway down, if you change your mind, there ain't no way back. So that's not going to be a justification. If you know that getting good grades is going to contribute to your future being and your livelihood being through halal means, it starts right now. And that only depends on being organized. In the future, if you have a bad temper because stress pushes you, you're abusive to your children, it's your fault because you weren't organized back then. So for some of us who have grown older, it's too late. But for you younger guys, being organized, planning is of utmost importance. And when Imam Ali says, take lesson, he's not talking about these people. Imam Ali was the most organized of all. When he talks about that, he's talking about high hopes. He's talking about private jets. Things that you have to spend everything of your life to get to. Recite the salawat. There's more things that, well, if I get into it, it's going to take too long. I don't want to tire you. It's been enough time. So let's end it here. Let's go to Karbala. Assalamu alaykum, Ya Aba Abdullah. Ya Aba Abdullah. Last night I might have said this, that when they asked Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, or I might have not said this, I don't remember. When they asked Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, explain to us, tell us what the hardest part was of Ashura, of this whole journey that you had, this long journey that started from Medina. When you go on a journey, brothers and sisters, you get very tired. And there's always that hope and that knowledge of you coming back home that keeps you alive. When I travel, it really destroys me. By the time I get back, I'm down for a week sometimes. Takes a toll. This journey started from Medina. Think about it. For months and months, you're not home. You're just carrying tents with you here and there like the Bedouins. You go from Medina to Mecca, where Rasulullah committed Hajj, performed Hajj, where Rasulullah started his mission. This is a place where you should be in a sanctuary, you should feel safe in. You've traveled slowly, not on horseback and galloping towards Mecca, slowly with the camels because you have women and children with you. Slowly you have made your way to Mecca and it's Hajj time, but you don't feel safe there. Aba Abdullah has no choice but to get and move from Mecca. He can't perform Hajj even. They don't let the son of Rasulullah to perform Hajj because they want to assassinate him. So the women and children, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, they all have to get back on the camels. Leave Medina in the scorching sun, leave Mecca, once again continue their journey. They have to continue the journey all the way. Where are we going? We're going to Kufa. But they never make it to Kufa until after Ashura. After Ashura, after all that hardship, after all that fatigue, you thought you were going to go to Kufa and you will be welcomed by the thousands. Instead, you are welcomed by the stones of the thousands. You are welcomed in Sham by the fire that is thrown on you, from the rooftops by the women who are cheering that these kuffar were eventually defeated. These kuffar that were the children of the Ali that they say, who wouldn't pray, that we would curse on the minbars. These children, alhamdulillah, we eventually were able to be victorious over them. How tired can one be? After months and months under the scorching sun, and then has to go to Sham, which is the place where the enemies were. Kufa, people loved Ahlul Bayt still. They killed Ahlul Bayt, but they loved them still. This is an alarm for us, brothers and sisters. Love isn't enough. Love is not enough. People think love is enough. Love is not enough. People loved Ahlul Bayt. The Kufans, they grew up with Ahlul Bayt. Zainab al-Kubra grew up in Kufa. But they're welcome with stones and fire. Sham is different though. Sham is full of enemies. They have grown with hatred of Imam Ali. They have grown with hatred of Ahlul Bayt. That's why when they asked Imam Sajjad, what was the hardest part of this long, tiring journey? Imam Sajjad says, Asham, Asham, Asham. Three times he says, Sham was too hard for us. They say when Ahlul Bayt came into Sham, from the rooftops they were throwing fire on them. This fire is not enough for you. Inshallah, in the hellfire you will burn because you are kuffar. You went against the Khalifa of your time. The children of Rasulullah have to be under the fire. Imam Sajjad says, I was there. Fire came on my turban. It turned on fire. But my hands were tied. I couldn't turn the fire off. My skin was burnt because of the fire that was on my head. But that's not as hard as what I'm going to talk about now. Because they say he was able to get into the heart of one of these people in Sham. This person said, what do you want me to do for you? What can I do for you? There's two reports here. One, he says, he told them to move the heads away. Take the heads to the front of the line so that the people look at the heads, it draws their attention. And people don't look at the women of Ahlul Bayt, the women of Rasulullah. These Shamis that are enemies of Ahlul Bayt, they don't look at Zainab, they don't look at my aunt Kulthum, they don't look at my sisters. They look at the heads. Ya Sajjad, you had to spend from the heads of the Abu Abdullah, from the heads of the martyrs, so that people don't look at Zainab, so that people don't look at Kulthum. Another report says, he asked, oh old person, oh old man, from what I remember, he said, can you bring me some cloth? Why? Sajjad, why? Now that I know you're Ahlul Bayt, what's wrong? He said, bring me some cloth. Throughout this journey, these shackles and these chains, the hot scorching sun have made them hot. They have bruised my neck. My neck is in pain. My neck is bleeding. I can't take it anymore. Can you find me some cloth to put in here? Under the shackles, so that I can take the pain away. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Al-Aliyyil Azeem. Brothers and sisters, after the majlis tonight, it's a night of Saturday. It's Saturday night, so we're off tomorrow. Inshallah, stay for the noha, for the sina zani. It's only a couple minutes. It's kind of disrespectful that we all leave. Just for 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes, inshallah. Stay, and of course those of you who have to go, I'm not saying don't go. Those who have something they have to do, they have to go, inshallah go. But inshallah, let's stay and let's keep this tradition alive, inshallah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.